Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Welcome today to the Escape Pod. With us where we are, we've had Joy's AGM today. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of Joy people around. And it's good to see there are hundreds of people who volunteer at this station. There are hundreds of presenters. And everyone, apart from a very, very few people who are here to keep us on air, do that for the love of the station and for the love of our community. So it was quite impressive to realise there's in total about 450 people that give their time on a regular basis to keep Joy 24/7 as a station on air and sounding great and representing us. So thank you very much to all those people. It was quite touching to see how many of them turned out today. Thank you for that. Well, on Escape Pod today, normally Joe's here. You've just got me, Mark. Joe is currently travelling again. She is a global jet setter after all. I don't know where she is at the moment. She was telling me in between airports, and I get confused because she has so many destinations that she gets to on a regular basis, but I think it's Santiago. But wherever you are, Joe, keep waving at us and let us know where you are for a very short period of time before going off to the next spot. Not a lot in travel news apart from who's got the biggest, and everyone knows what this means. It's G20. So who's hauled out the biggest airplane to get to Australia? And everyone would assume that it's Air Force One, but the Russians have won in this. They have brought on I can't pronounce the word of it. It's something that has a terrible global footprint. I think it burns 67 litres of av gas a second, and is also nuclear powered and runs on the tears of unicorns. So thank you very much to the Russian government for bringing that with your fleet of ships that Tony Abbott has chosen not to send back the boats this time. So the G20 is going on in Brisbane. There's a whole lot of things to do and a whole lot of things you cannot do. Thank you to the G20. It's pretty much locked down. So good luck to everybody in Brizzy this weekend. I think going up to the sunny coast or down to the Gold Coast is probably a better idea to fill your time instead of trying to get into the city of Brisbane. But good luck to everybody there. The Germans have had a couple of good gongs this week. The first one that I've noticed this week that was important is Angela Merkel walking around the streets of Brisbane having a beer with German backpackers and people in pubs and gleefully smiling as people praise her, her country, their brewing traditions and everything about Germany. And Germany has got a quite an angel haze and glaze at the moment. It was nominated the most fun... the German capital, Berlin, was tipped as the most fun city in the world by Go Euro, who just happens to be a German-based, Berlin-based booking agent. So well done, Berlin. And the Anhalt GfK Europa National, you might have been able to tell that's also another German company, Roper Nations Brand Index Top 10, have listed Germany as number one brand, pipping the United States, who is now number two, number three, United Kingdom, four, France, 5 Canada, 6 Japan, 7 Italy, 8 Switzerland, 9 Australia and 10 Sweden. We are in very elite global company there, Australian friends. And if you've got a German bent, there you go, right at the top. And who thought that was going to happen in 1941? We've got a guest in Escape Pod today who's going to talk very eloquently and very authoritatively about the top places for LGBTIQ travellers. Chris works with the Lonely Planet. And that's not a building in Elsternwick, is it?
No, it's not a building in Elsternwick.
That's the Daily Planet.
That's the Daily Planet. We're based down in Footscray. We're
different businesses, are we?
Different business. Right. There are lots of stories of people coming to visit us that have actually accidentally been taken by taxi to that fine establishment in Elsternwick. And businessmen rocking up kind of going, no, I'm here for a different kind of appointment.
Hello, yeah, a place where I would assume there would be more waxing going on.
Correct.
Right. So let's talk about you first and, sure. and your context. You're a travel author, writer, you're a blah, blah, blah. Tell us about your career.
Yeah, so I'm coming up to my ninth year with Lonely Planet, which is I'm all of a sudden going, how did that happen? So I actually started with Lonely Planet as a in their marketing team, and ended up I've kind of risen the ranks there, and now I'm the Asia Pacific Sales and Marketing Director, as well.
So
as
what does that mean? Because let's in the framework of what you do, let's talk about Lonely Planet as well, because that's what you do. But Lonely Planet's a big deal.
Yeah, it really is, and you know, we've been around for 41 years. So started in Melbourne. So Tony and Maureen Wheeler that started the business from their kitchen table in Hawthorne. They wrote their first book and they hand sold it to Melbourne bookstores. So it was very much a Melbourne institution that kind of took on the world and has become this massive global brand.
So a Reader's Feast and all those kind of places.
Yeah,
bookshops.
It was a hand stapled book, and there was, I think they did 1,500 copies of the first print run, and so the, you know, so the so the story goes, and the empire was born. Mm. And what's really fantastic is that we're still got a Melbourne-based head office, even though we've gone through various different owners. So it's very much still a very Australian brand, which is something that I absolutely love, and it's afforded me a career in an industry that I love, but doing something in terms of the travel aspect that I also love that kind of filters through.
You're very fortunate to have all those threads knitting together.
Absolutely. And, you know, look, the company itself is really interesting in terms of its philosophy, because its philosophy hasn't changed, which is all about travel as a force for good. And that travel actually will enrich people's lives and kind of make the world better. That might sound kind of really lofty and heady, but it's actually it's a really beautiful sentiment, and it informs everything that we do. So we're all about trying to give people the best recommendations to make their trip better, take the hard yards out of something that they've done, because we've already gone out and done it ourselves. And because it's not paid, there's no paid advertising that's coming through. There's kind of no cash for comment. It's completely independent. It's down to our author pool. It's down to it's our opinion, and therefore it comes with this sense of authority, which a lot of other things don't actually have.
But that's the beauty of it. You read it and it feels like someone who's actually done it is turning around and giving you their insight rather than you must do.
Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely correct. And they go every time. So we have up to 220 authors in market at any one point in time that are actually researching, that are all on the ground. We've actually got them vlogging now as well. So they've all got video cameras as well. So because obviously the world has changed so significantly in terms of social media and all of those things, that we need to incorporate all of that aspect of the way that we do things into our authors' framework as well. So not only are do they need to be vloggers and authors and really good writers with a sense of personality, but they also need to be up with Instagram and Twitter and all of these kind of other areas, because the way that we interact with our traveller now is on a very daily level, which is really exciting in terms of where the brand will go, you know, in the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years.
How exciting. And I've noticed that when I moved to Dubai the first time in 1996. So this is pre-internet being ubiquitous. So my friend and I and her girlfriend at the time were thinking, Dubai, that's in Thailand, right? And so we walked down to the South Melbourne Library. Well, I found out. We went to the South Melbourne Library and we were looking through and we found the information we needed in a Lonely Planet guide. And at the time, that was where it was. In 1996, it was a column. It wasn't even a whole page. It was a column. So, but that was the most authoritative current voice at the time that we had to refer to. So let's talk about how the Lonely Planet is expressing itself, because back then it was purely paper-based.
Yeah, for sure.
Right. So let's talk about where it is now and how travellers can access.
Yeah, and I think I used the word daily before, and that's probably more of where the brand has actually gone, is that the conversation that we're having happening with our travellers at the moment is not just in that printed product anymore. Absolutely, the printed product product is part of our core business. You know, it sells books in bookstores and it keeps book retailers open, and it's a really important part of a part of the mix. But the engagement of conversation is actually far more interesting now in terms of you can. It could be a tweet that lends you to someone else's website, or some other really interesting article that inspires you to do the, you know, to go out and experience the world in a different way. It could be via our magazine. We've got something like 13 magazines called Traveller worldwide now in terms of publication.
Right.
It could be via our Spotify lists, I mean, that which inspire travellers to actually, maybe sample Portuguese music for the first time, and that's how they interact with the brand. So it actually means that our strands of influence are actually far more interesting and far more engaging on this more daily level. So the conversation is definitely quite different to what it was sort of 10, 15 years ago.
And very current and very multimedia in terms of really reaching out to everybody in innovative, creative, and human ways.
Absolutely. And you know, we've got news feeds on lonelyplanet.com that are constant. So daily we send out kind of like travel news to the world in terms of what's really interesting, but from a Lonely Planet way, where we want to look at things, we absolutely want to know what's going on within the travel world for people, but we also want to do those really positive recommendations of this is an emerging destination, you might not have thought of this place before, or actually we're challenging your ideas of what you thought of that place. Yeah. So you may have actually thought it was X, Y, and Z, but we're actually telling you it's A, B, and C. So it's a really interesting way of having this ongoing conversation. I think we're one of the few travel brands as well that actually really, really cares for our traveler community. So we have this forum called Thorn Tree, where people jump online and they talk to us about what's great and what's not so great about what we're recommending. And we tend to every post we will follow up on, or we'll send to an author to follow up on. So right. it's a very much a two-way conversation. It's not just we'll take your feedback and thank you very much. We really want to engage, and we recognise the pieces of information that we've enacted upon from our travellers in the back of our guidebook.
So right, I've noticed that listener names. Yeah,
and that's all our traveller community sort of saying thank you very much. You told us about that bar that's just opened two streets over from the place that we were actually recommending, and that's just as good as the place that we're recommending. Thank you. We'll include that in the next edition.
Isn't that funny you brought that up? When I was living in Dubai, I'd have friends who would come over on a frequent basis, and they'd be in their Lonely Planet guys, I want this, I want that. And I would give them feedback about, oh, yeah, that's actually changed this, that. And a couple of them emailed in and let you know.
And that's perfect. And because we're also very much about travel is not a prescription, or travel guides should not be a prescription. Mm. They should be the thing that actually guides and helps and encourages you to actually be a bit braver and go down, you know, instead of actually just exploring one pocket, that you're able to go to a neighbourhood that you wouldn't necessarily thought of, and actually feel confident in travelling. So that's what we're all about. And you know, working in such a fantastic and inclusive environment is pretty gold. I'm pretty lucky.
We're going to get to that after a short break. We've got the most gay friendly places on the planet. It's a list of what is it? 14?
10.
10. Well, I'm not the most literate person on the planet today. We've got a list of 10 places that are most gay-friendly places on the planet we're going to talk about after the break.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
We're on air now talking about the most gay-friendly places on the planet. We're joined by Chris from Lonely Planet. Lonely Planet, I think everyone has known about for a very, very long time. 40 years they've been publishing.
Yeah, 41.
Yeah, 41 years. That's a long time. A lot of staples, Maureen. And
a lot of staples, yep. A lot of words.
And such a great couple, and they've contributed so much to Melbourne, the Wheeler Centre. Absolutely. And, you know, just the things that they've done since they moved to Australia and what they've contributed to Melbourne is absolutely outstanding. Yeah. And we doff our cap to them on many, many bases. And they've created a very inclusive company for our community. And talk to that again. We were talking about that a little bit off air before.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I have it's an incredibly inclusive environment at Lonely Planet. I've been out open really from the day dot. And we've got a really strong community within the building in Footscray, as well as the company globally. And it really shocked me when it came to, so it's the 10th year that we've done our Best in Travel lists, and these are very much about agenda setting for the year to come, so very forward looking in terms of places to go. And one of the interesting things is we tend to do these kind of quirky lists because we know that people like to either travel on a theme or travel in a particular way. And when I was looking back at the product over the last 9 years, I was like, we haven't done a gay-friendly list. Huh? What?
But the time goes, right?
Yeah, it does. And I actually think that speaks more to us just think because it's just been intrinsically as part of our product because we have gay and lesbian recommendations throughout all of our guidebooks. It's in the DNA of the brand and the DNA of what we do. You know, we similarly do things for travelling with families or travelling female solo travellers. So we
travelling on a budget people with disabilities.
Exactly. We really are quite inclusive. And so it's kind of been intrinsic in what we do. So it was, then I was kind of thinking, at the time when the pitch came forward for this publication, there was a lot in the media about some significant anti-gay sentiment out in the media, and that really struck me that I could actually use a recommendation as a force for good.
Take us back. How long between now? When did this come out?
This came out on October 21. So
yeah, it's about a month ago. So how long before you publish something does it pitch? Was that Russia stuff?
Absolutely. You knocked it on the head. So April is normally when we do our pitching for this product because
we
6 months in advance. We want to actually make sure that the content is as fresh as possible. And there was such a momentum behind the anti-gay sentiment that was going on there. I was actually about to go to Denmark to the Eurovision Song Contest as well.
Which is probably the gayest thing on the planet.
Totally is, but, and
it's the gay version of a black hole. It's so dense, it sucks everything else in.
And it is.
It's a glorious black hole.
Just leave that. Don't touch that. It's an event. That's all I have to say. It was about, well, what can I do in terms of, in my own kind of small way, to actually be, to really highlight destinations that were inclusive, that are from our community's point of view, where should people be going and they feel like they can travel in safety, feel like they're really comfortable, but also think about a destination that they may never have actually considered travelling to before.
Yeah, great. So let's talk about the methodology just briefly, because anytime you see these lists, people go, oh, BuzzFeed, why don't you put it on? So there isn't science behind it necessarily because it can't be measured.
Yes.
Right? So it's more best opinion of the day. Is that correct? Is that how you come up there? Or?
Yeah, no. So the way that we do it is all of our lists are created and generated by a set of authors and that obviously they're travel experts. They know what they're talking about.
Current travel experts.
Correct. And it goes towards a panel for ratification.
Right.
So there's actually...
Best opinion of the day.
Yeah. So there is a criteria that we do actually that we assess these things by. So what is happening in the year to come? So is there actually something that makes it important as a destination? Does it have some kind of momentum or X factor behind it? So people are just talking about it. So for instance, everybody's talking about Iceland at the moment within the travel community. It's one of the go-to places at the moment. So does it have that kind of thing in terms of that X factor? And does it have something significant that is changing the face of the actual destination that's taking place?
How do you mean change the face?
Does it have
social
new construction, new cultural event? It might be a food festival. It might be a once in a lifetime kind of thing that's occurring.
Changing
in
government.
Destination. Correct.
Okay. So it's quite a broad
criteria. Yeah. Layered over this for the gay friendly places. It was very much about looking at equality, so assessing equality and assessing safety as well as being a little bit unexpected. We absolutely wanted to highlight the places that we felt were absolutely endorsing of our community. But again, going back to that thing about take another look at these places, you might not have necessarily thought that was the place to go.
Okay, now you were mentioning Copenhagen just now, and a lot of people, if you we're going to tweet this link and we'll have it up on Facebook, on the Escape Pod Facebook page, or you can just Google Lonely Planet, Most Gay Friendly Places 2014, you'll find it. Chris's name will come up, Chris Zier.
Correct, yeah.
Z-E-I-H-E-R, if you, that's a pretty easy way to find it. There's not a lot of Zier's, right?
No, it's not.
You were just talking about Copenhagen. That's number one on the list.
Yeah, it is.
So talk to us about Copenhagen and what made your tin of biscuits relevant.
So the thing about Copenhagen was when you actually drill into the history of the destination and how inclusive and how forward-thinking
the destination is. Was there
something about Mary? That's shocking. There is just something about Mary. No, there is something about Copenhagen that is widely embracing of the of our community. It's one of the few places in the world, and I think the only other place that I was really encouraged to see this was in Stockholm, where I can see two men walking hand in hand with a pram with their child in it, and I know that that couple has the same kind of rights that a heterosexual couple has, or same, you know, we've got, you know, two lesbians holding hand, walking down the street hand in hand. And again, I know that that couple has the same rights as that, you know, the heterosexual couple that's walking next to them. So it's those kind of things that make me absolutely bubble a destination to the surface. But it's also then about, you know, what are the interesting things to do there for our community when you're thinking about where you should travel in the year to come. And it is, you know, Copenhagen and Denmark are fascinating places in terms of the cuisine, in terms of it's easy access to the rest of Europe. So it does actually, it does tick a lot of boxes in terms of getting you to other places.
And the Danes have a great nature.
And you know what? They are the most...
And they go, when they're agreeing with you.
And they are the most beautiful people on the planet. Oh, Scarlett, my standard joke is even the gypsy beggars should be in an H&M catalogue.
Yeah.
So they are an incredibly attractive
species. Yeah, they're photogenic.
And they're all tall. They're all tall.
Yeah. Yeah, the home of Lego.
From mini toys to really tall, which to really tall people. Right?
Yeah, boy toys. Yeah, so you really enjoyed Copenhagen, I'm hearing. So deservedly number one on the list
absolutely.
For 2014.
Absolutely.
Now, I think this is the only one of the list that I noticed. New Zealand is just the whole country. It just is number two. Didn't even pick a spot. It's just the whole dang thing.
New Zealand's really interesting. So I've been travelling.
Because we love our New Zealanders.
I have to say, the Kiwis are incredibly, incredibly embracing of our community.
We have a lot of people here at Joy who, because New Zealand is a small place, they're very active participating in Joy. I mean, Melbourne's basically the same population of all of New Zealand.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's not because of the lack of New Zealand's wanting things, it's purely because of population size. And we've got a large contingent of Kiwis here who participate incredibly to Joy's success,
which speaks volumes
of
to
the people.
Of
yep,
the
yep.
people. And I think the really interesting thing, and when I was doing the research for the list, was that I actually found out that New Zealand was the first destination anywhere in the world that actually coined the moniker of gay, lesbian friendly accommodation, and that's globally adopted worldwide now. So this was it was back in the mid 90s that they started to actually really say my accommodation will embrace your community. Please come here from the length and the breadth of the two islands. So that in and of itself, and then obviously with the equality laws that have recently hit the parliament over there, we've got the Prime Minister talking about it. There's a debate about at the moment about that whether they the one of the political parties in New Zealand can cope with a gay man being potentially being prime minister. So it's this kind of stuff that is a really interesting conversation that's taking place on a political as well as a travel level.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
So we're talking about the most gay-friendly places in the world. And Chris, if you've just tuned in, is a bigwig at Lonely Planet, and he's also the author of this article. It was published about a month ago, and we finally got him to get on air and talk to us about it. So we're going through each and every one. We've talked about our friends across the ditch in the land of the wrong white crowd, and we've also been talking about Copenhagen, which is a beautiful, fun, great country with beautiful, fun people. And Now we're going to talk about
number three,
which is
number three is Toronto in Canada.
And oh, I love Canada.
Yeah, look, Canada, beautiful, inclusive nation. And I was kind of spoilt for choice here in terms of the destination that I wanted that really bubbled to the surface in Canada, and it was really about the Pride Week celebrations that occur in Toronto that really made it really pertinent. It's very inclusive to all parts and all facets of our community, and that was something that absolutely needs to be highlighted. It's a fantastic city. It's got a very Melbourne vibe about it, actually.
Yeah, it does.
Young
and blue all around that area.
Yeah, and it's got a great little cafe culture and bits and pieces, and you do feel very much at home. And certainly it can be a bit of a crazy ride. I would avoid it in winter if I were you, though, because it's freezing.
Yeah, you don't need your speedos then.
Oh, no. So Toronto in Canada came in at number three. And the fourth one, which was really interesting for me, was, looking at US destinations, one that was really bubbling to the surface again. And this came down to a very much about accommodation, which is Palm Springs in the US. And Palm Springs is this incredible city in the desert. But it's got this great mix of inclusive accommodation for boys and for girls. So,
talk about the history of Palm Springs, because a lot of people don't know about it, and they might confuse it with Palm Beach in Florida.
Yeah, kind of a different kind of area. So it was
a couple of hundred kilometres inland.
I know. So it's about
past the Inland Empire.
Yeah, so it's about 100 miles southeast of Los Angeles, and it kind of
about 200 kilometres.
Yeah. Pardon me. And it kind of sprung to the attention in the 50s when it was a bit of a playground for the mafia and for some film stars to escape, kind of like that Los Angeles Hollywood lifestyle. And it's got this incredible architecture that's there. It's one of the driest cities on the planet, apparently. So it's got the one of the few least amount of rainfall that you'll get anywhere. So you get this amazing amount of sunshine.
Is it on the way to Nevada? Is it?
I think it's southeast, so it would be
on the way to Vegas.
So that would be Nevada. It's just this really interesting, different kind of look at what lifestyle is in America, as well as being this perfect little getaway for our community is great at adopting really glamorous places, and it's a glamorous place.
Well, my understanding of Palm Springs, it started off a place where people who wanted to go away from the cameras went. So early Hollywood, of course, back then homosexuality was outlawed. A lot of the gay community, particularly people working in the movie business, wanted to go away so they could sit around in their tidy-whities with their preferred lover and escape the lens, the prying lens.
You are spot on.
So it's always been a real gay enclave.
That's a good way of describing it. It's been a little bit of a pilgrimage for many to escape the pressures of the society that was put on them at that particular time. It kind of got a bit daggy and a bit dated in the 70s and 80s. So whereas now it's absolutely it's revitalized, it's revamped, it's put a lot of effort, the local community has put a lot of effort into rejigging a lot of the architecture and stuff that's there. It's also got this really kind of quaint or emerging dining cuisine that's coming up too. So lots of, again, lots of really interesting things from a traveler's point of view to get themselves stuck into.
Okay. And my notes here says it also has one of the longest running clothing optional resorts for gay gentlemen's in Palm Springs for the 50 Stars Escape Resort. Tell us about this. This is just
so the escape.
I'm picking Fonzie with no pants on.
Well, yes, you could.
Hey,
that could be quite scary, couldn't it? Is it Chachi? No, we won't go there. So the Escape Resort is again one of the longest running establishments in Palm Springs. It's clothing optional. Establishment for.
Did you go,
for gentlemen? No, I haven't. I have not stayed, should I say? but it is one of the longer running establishments, and it's just a good example of the kind of things that it presents. There's also there's a Spanish style, kind of laid back. well, I suppose, what do you call it, sort of accommodation for the ladies. So there's lots of different options for boys and for girls.
Well, while you've used the word Spanish, that brings us to number five. And what a segue. Thank you for that.
Nice.
You make it just so easy for me today.
I know. Yeah. It's like I'm almost read beforehand.
Yeah, you could have just written this.
Funny that. Sitges in Spain. Yeah. So, again, it's part of one of the kind of the things that we were looking at here is there is that kind of, I think they call it the Big Four, Gran Canaria, Sitges, Ibiza, and then Mykonos. And we kind of, I did want to recognise that there are these destinations that are real pilgrimages and escapes for particularly a lot of Europeans. This is a global product. Mm-hmm. So we need to make sure that all these kind of places are included.
It is very pan-European, isn't it? Because Europe, in a lot of ways, people filter down to these Spanish places because summer in Germany or the Netherlands really a march when you can get on a train a couple of hours, be in some of the most beautiful parts of the world.
You're absolutely correct, and I mean, I in terms of still being able to swim in the ocean in sort of October and November is pretty significant when you're in Europe. So I think that's a huge tick for those kind of Mediterranean destinations, and it's just got a really heady calendar of things to do whilst you're actually there. It's lazy in the days and kind of exciting and fun at night. So that definitely had to hit the list. And in terms of catering for everybody's tastes, number six, had to throw in Berlin in Germany.
Berlin is working overtime with PR right now.
But really, at the end of the day, like that is that any taste, anything that you want, you can get it in Berlin.
Yeah, and we're talking about rather fringe products on the shelves here, aren't we? I mean, some rather exotic tastes. Yeah,
absolutely. There's some things that
you know. I use the word taste.
It's kind of like it's also that whole thing about do I need to wash my eyeballs after I've actually seen some of that stuff?
Hold that thought. Hold that thought just for one moment.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Before we had that lovely break, Chris, you were talking about being in Berlin and washing your balls.
My eyeballs.
Right.
Because Berlin's a fantastic city. Mm. And I think when you get there, people don't realise it's actually quite... it's quite difficult to get around. It's not the easiest of cities to kind of traverse.
Well, speak to that. Recent history.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously, with the wall going up and the division of the two cities, the wall coming down, and the reemergence of the recalibration of the city. It's just a very interesting enclavey kind of city.
Preceding that, the bombing from the Second World War basically obliterated, and the Trümmerfrauen because only the women were left. The men were all shot to pieces. So the women had to clear every street and pile back what used to be their buildings and their lives and create the city anew. Yeah. And then it got divided. So here was a city with an old city that was flattened and then divided and then had to rebuild itself in two different mindsets. So, yeah, public transport.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. And it's one of those cities that I would suggest to people, if you think of doing it, if you're thinking of walking, please have done your training beforehand.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And wear some brilliant, some brilliant walking boots. It's definitely...
Full cotton gusset
oh,
day.
Oh, my Lord. So Berlin is one of these places that, again, because it's so divided, as you articulately kind of described, it has created these really interesting kind of suburbs and communities, and each one has a slightly different vibe and a different kind of bent to it. So it's an interesting one to explore. Mm. And again, it's a city without inhibition. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, the Germans have freier Körperkultur, which is very happy being naked everywhere.
Oh yes,
and I don't think Angela Merkel is expressing herself that way whilst in the G20 in Brisbane this weekend.
But it is good to see her.
As she's trotting around town having a beer.
Yeah, with the German backpackers. All good.
Yeah, so the districts, Schöneberg, Kreuzberg, Prenzlauer Berg, the hotspots at the moment, and they're all very different, aren't they? You pick one of those areas. What do you get?
I would suggest to everybody to actually just make sure that they know the kind of district that they're going to and the kind of things that are are on offer there. So
and they're ready.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you wanted a quiet drink and you end up going to a specific place and then you end up in a certain kind of leather bar, I think you just need to be kind of slightly aware of what you're actually doing.
Start off with Schönenberg and work your way up to Prenzlauer Berg because.
Yeah. We then moved on to Greece. Obviously, we wanted to include, we definitely wanted to include Mykonos, but we also wanted to have a look at slightly other destinations that were less hedonistic, that were...
So you went... Hold on, I've got the rest of the list here.
Yeah, so we went to Skithos. So which is a slightly quieter island, very beautiful, much more about, again, incredibly inclusive, but very much about allowing you to. It's not that kind of big party island. It's very much a place where you can actually get off the grid and dwell and have a great kind of homestay or a great accommodation that's actually there. So we kind of wanted to give two really really nice alternatives within the Greek islands there. We threw in New York City. Again, a lot of that was to do with the history. And from a gay and lesbian traveller's point of view, there's so much to see there in terms of the recent history of our
Ooh,
community.
Stonewall.
And this is, you know, going down Christopher Street and actually doing all of, and actually learning about the changes that happened within the, you know, the North American landscape and how much that still is impacting on us today. Really, really important, I think, from anyone that belongs in our community to kind of get a part of that history.
Well, Manhattan's reputed to have the highest density of LGBTI people.
And it's also got some, again, the accommodation that's there for is incredibly inclusive. And you know, welcoming with open arms. Mm. So beautiful place and so much to do there. So, you know, it's one of those places that you just keep going back to and back to and back to. One of my favourite places on the planet is Reykjavik in Iceland. Mm-hmm. Came in at number 9, one of the oldest European pride marches in Europe is the Reykjavik Pride. It's also, it's a happy place. They just love people. They love tourists. They're very much. They are the most beautiful inbred nation on the planet. I'll give them that. because they're all. It's one of the few destinations. It's one of the few countries that's actually got all of their history completely written down. Because there was no indigenous population, and the first settlers that actually went there were able to keep written records from day dot. So they can actually trace family tree right back to. Right back to the
because they were Norwegian originally, weren't they, or
correct.
Danes?
No, they were Norwegian. I think you're correct there. And one of the best things that I learnt when I was there, I was out in a bar in Reykjavik, and one of the guys I was chatting to said to me, "Oh, have you heard about the app, the Icelandic app?" And I was like, "Yeah, okay, it's an app. What?" And he's like, "No. It's put out by the government, and you have to have a government number. You have to have a citizen number. And if you're out getting jiggy with getting your dance on and you're kind of liking the look of the person that's opposite you and you want to find out how related you are, you tap your phones together and it will actually say you're about to shag your third cousin." So yeah, kind of fun.
Well, not everyone's fun.
But no, but quite interesting.
Oh,
too.
I see what you mean. And I see that they've got bears on ice, so you don't have to go to Smith Street to see that.
No, correct. At the Blue Lagoon, which is truly one of the most spectacular geothermal places. I wanted to only spend a couple of hours there. 7 hours later, I was still in the water with my third mask on. It was Bears on Ice actually has a regular yearly. A yearly event there that pulls everybody in globally, but you need to definitely book early. And the other one that, you know, to round out the list, from in terms of inclusive and thought-provoking, I did want to throw in somewhere that was slightly unusual, and I put in Montevideo in Uruguay. And a lot of that was to do with the change in the laws that are going on there and the inclusiveness. South America is not necessarily known as an inclusive destination.
So tell us about Montevideo, because Uruguay is settled not only by people with Spanish background. There's a very large German community there.
Correct.
So it's got its own thing going on, right?
It does. And it's actually for a South American or a Central American destination as well. It's actually one of the safer ones to travel to. So it's very inclusive. It's incredibly interesting. It's got great architecture as well. So from a traveller's point of view, lots to do when you're actually there, and really shows the potential emerging change that's actually going on within communities that, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be all backward thinking.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Chris from The Lonely Planet, you've been talking to us today. Thank you very much for coming and talking about Lonely Planet's most gay-friendly destinations. Great question coming from Joe from Richmond. Joe wants to know, where do you feel the gaps are and where would you like to increase the focus for the next publication of the list?
I'd like to see some Australian destinations in there, mm-hmm. that's for sure. I also would think and hope that we will see slightly more interesting European destinations in there as well. So similar to the way that we were able to include Reykjavik this year, I'd like to see some more off the beaten track kind of destinations within Europe too. We'll continue to search and find and do what we do and kind of recommend those emerging destinations.
Looking
as they
forward
come out.
To it. Excellent.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.